All right, so Mr. Lloyd, there is now no barrier to you addressing noise barriers.
Noise barriers. The acoustic assessment prescribes 5-metre-high noise barriers to the east of the designation and 3-metre-high barriers to the north, adjacent to Maple Street, and these have been included as noise management plan requirements. Land to the east of the designation is elevated above the finished ground level of the freight hub with the cross sections provided as part of a response to the Section 92 request, indicating that these barriers will not effectively screen all dwellings. Noise barriers next to Maple Street will not effectively screen the upper stories of dwellings. I consider that there needs to be some design input to optimise local barrier heights rather than a blanket prescription. This requirement is now proposed as the requiring authority's draft condition 90C1 and 2. Data must be used for the height of the barriers. My understanding of the design is that the barrier height is above the finished ground level of the freight hub, which was deleted in the requiring authority draft condition 90. And I consider this reference needs to be retained in conditions. Otherwise, the datum becomes the finished ground level for which there is no control. The size 3 metres and locations of barriers along the western boundary are now included as requiring authorities draft condition 90C3, which is particularly relevant for dwellings on Tinaya Road and Cleverly Line, if dwellings still remain within 500 metres of the freight hub when operation commences. Submissions. I've discussed submission points in my evidence in chief. Many of the submitters raise concerns about the noise and vibration impacts that will result from each aspect of the proposal. A proposal of this scale will inevitably have significant noise impacts on the semi-rural nature of this area. Concerns have been expressed about the lack of certainty in the acoustic assessment regarding the best level of mitigation for construction and operational noise, the timing of the instigation of any mitigation measures, and who will be responsible for it. Many submitters expressed sincerely held concerns about the noise impacts that would result from the freight hub construction and operation, and about the restrictions on daily lives that will result from the freight hub noise and the required noise mitigation measures. It was explained that aspects of living in a semi-rural area would be curtailed and that the enjoyment of living with open windows and the cross-ventilation of dwellings would be lost. These will be the inevitable consequences on the closest neighbours to the freight hub, given the significant levels of noise that will result. There have been discussions throughout the hearing about the establishment of hard noise and vibration limits that can act as objectives for noise management plans to achieve. Draft conditions recommended by the requiring authority had no noise or vibration limits, and these have been developed as part of the Section 42A process in something of a piecemeal fashion, which continues as I write this summary statement. A number of submitters have provided statements and legal submissions which I have found to be extremely helpful, and I thank them for that. Draft noise conditions. There are a significant number of dwellings that will be exposed to high levels of noise and other dwellings that will receive lower noise levels but will need noise insulation and or ventilation to mitigate the noise to achieve appropriate levels in bedrooms in particular. Since I wrote my Section 42A evidence, the draft conditions proposed by the requiring authority have been amended to meet a number of my concerns and matters raised in submissions. At the time of writing this statement, not all of these amendments are agreed. I've been liaising with Ms. Copplestone to refine the draft noise conditions that I consider should be included in this NOR to provide for noise mitigation and to protect residential amenity. At the time of writing this summary statement, the situation was still developing regarding the precise wording of the conditions. I can discuss both of the versions of draft conditions as required and identify where disagreement still remains, and some key points are below. I consider that North Island main trunk noise should be included in the freight hub. which will allow mitigation measures to be appropriately determined in relation to actual aural environment and sensible noise monitoring undertaken. I've recommended that the words, as far as practicable, be deleted from the requiring authority's draft conditions 85 and 86. The operational noise and vibration limits in these conditions are intended to be bottom line enforceable standards, allowing them to be exceeded if it is not practicable to comply with, will result in noise and vibration levels that are greater than the noise mitigation is designed to control. This would have adverse effects, have adverse health and amenity impacts on neighbours to the freight hub. Consider it appropriate to provide for exceedance of the construction noise and vibration limits where they cannot practicably be achieved, because construction work is a temporary activity and elements of this exceedance will be inevitable. Remaining areas of disagreement, and these have been set out in the joint witness statement. With respect to the JWS, a number of the areas of disagreement are self-explanatory, but I would briefly expand on the reasons why I consider the North Island main trunk noise should be included with the freight hub noise from an acoustical viewpoint. I think I've covered that. 56. Secondly, there will be practical difficulties in noise monitoring if NIMT noise is to be excluded. For example, monitoring would need to be stopped while a train passes. This could be done by placing sensors on the tracks or by a software recognition program that would identify an approaching train and pause the monitoring. But again, I consider this to be illogical given elements of the noise will be similar characteristics and the noise is all emanating from within the freight hub. The second matter of disagreement I will discuss further is around the future freight hub operational noise, is around what future freight hub operational noise should be assumed for condition 85C in the reporting officer's conditions. This condition provides for dwellings to be noise insulated at a time when the development of the freight hub is to take place and the detailed design of stage one has been completed. This triggers the requirement for the requiring authority to offer and install noise insulation and or ventilation. There is agreement that future noise contours for the rail hub should be established, but I disagree with Dr. Charles on the basis of these. The disagreement is with the level of future noise that should be assumed. I consider that future noise contours should be based on the maximum noise allowed by condition 85B, 65 dBA, beyond the designation boundary, and condition 85, that was 55 at the noise management boundary of the section 42A recommended conditions. This informs the location of the 45 dB LAEQ1R contour. These further noise conditions would be at similar locations to the contours shown in figure 1 above, and that's the figure 12 from the acoustic assessment. I consider that it is important to establish these future noise contours now because they become established hard noise design criteria that can be seen now and into the future. They will not be exceeded by freight hub activities because they relate to noise limits that are applied strategically in the conditions. They will provide for noise mitigation measures, noise insulation of dwellings to be applied only once, i.e. without the need for further insulation in the future. They will be apparent to people buying into the area or developing new dwellings, and they will allow council to develop land use management controls of surrounding land to require noise insulation and control new development as part of a separate district plan process should it be considered necessary. The condition would work in a similar manner to the sound insulation program at Auckland Airport. At Auckland Airport, the annual aircraft noise contours are projected every year to ensure that compliance with the noise contours is achieved and to determine who should be offered noise mitigation. The noise mitigation is then offered to protect against the maximum noise allowed by the future airport noise contours in 1 dB increments, rather than the interim noise levels that are being predicted at that time. The future airport noise contours at Auckland Airport are calculated as LDN, so cannot be compared to the freight hub contours, which are LEQ 1R. What I propose for the freight hub is a graduated prediction for maximum future noise levels ranging from 65 at the boundary of the designation to 55 at the noise control boundary, then to 45, then to the 45 contour. And these will be called future noise contours. I anticipate that the noise control boundary and 45 dB contour would subsequently be included in the district plan to allow land use management controls to be established for the area surrounding the freight hub. Examples of such reverse sensitivity controls are the Palmerston North Airport and wind farm setbacks, which have been provided for in the district plan. Conclusion. I've advised Council on the noise aspects of the freight hub. This included preparing a Section 42A noise report and evidence for this hearing. I undertook conferencing with the requiring authority's acoustic advisor, Dr. Charles, and together we prepared a joint witness statement that narrowed our areas of disagreement and identified the remaining matters of contention. At the time of writing this write of reply, these outstanding matters include nighttime construction work should have a specific condition, 72A, that regulates the activity, provides for mitigation, informs sensitive receivers and notifies council of the works. Noise impacts should be controlled by reference to hard noise conditions where possible, rather than by preference to future noise and vibration management plans. And operational noise and vibration limits should not be exempted on the basis of impracticability. While recognising there are separate legal arguments for acoustical reasons, NIMT noise should be included in the freight hub designation controls from an acoustic point of view. The assessment of special audible characteristics from the freight hub should be in accordance with the New Zealand standard. And the baseline for future noise controls, noise contours, should be the maximum levels provided for by conditions and should approximate to figure 12 of the acoustic assessment, included as figure 1 of this write of reply. I'm happy to answer any questions. We'll go through the conditions, any conditions that remain of concern.
Thank you. Questions? Commissioner Pomare?
Tēnā koe, Mr. Lloyd. Ngā mihi nui ki a koe. Thank you very much for your evidence. I don't have any specific questions for you because I found your discussion with Commissioner Marston extremely useful. And although I was struggling to find the right questions to ask myself to get to a lot of the points that you were able to respond to so clearly, I found the questions that were asked and the way you answered them very useful. So thank you.
Kia ora.
Commissioner Mackinson.
Hey, Mr. Lloyd. I also found your discussion with Commissioner Marston very helpful. I do have one or two minor questions remaining, and they relate to essentially what you've just shared with us after our short break. Excuse me, just having a document movement issue here. And I'd like to take you back to paragraph 51. Excuse me. Obviously, there's been quite some discussion with submitters around the issue of, as far as practicable, essentially giving Kiwi Rail a get-out-of-jail-free card if they cannot or choose not to, if we're being cynical, comply with the noise controls that have been suggested, particularly around the operational noise. And you had a conversation with Commissioner Marston around the number of houses that will be potentially affected by unacceptable levels of residential or unacceptable levels of noise in a residential setting based on your 65 decibel limit at the site boundary and then the 55 decibel noise limit, if you like, sort of around the wider area. And what I was just wondering is whether you could give a similar assessment of how many properties might be affected if that, as far as practicable, wording was taken out of the operational noise conditions?
Well, I obviously can't, because if 65 is exceeded at that boundary, then all of a sudden it could go to 70, for example. So then the contours would all move out by 5 decibels and could include a lot more dwellings. It sort of goes out exponentially almost.
Okay.
Logarithmically.
Didn't want to say that. No, it's more geometrically, actually, because it's the circle, and as the circle moves out, there's a lot more area included in the outer rim of the circle. So.
No, I appreciate that.
It's the lily pad in the pond effect.
Yes.
Yeah, sort of a doubling of the size of the lily pad to start with, you don't notice, and all of a sudden it's covered the pond.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so realistically, am I understanding correctly from your perspective, removal of the as far as practicable from an operational noise perspective is essential for any of the other noise controls to actually make sense?
Yes, and really, I'm relaxed about where the noise boundary goes. You know, if they need the noise boundary to be further out to comply, then as long as within reason, then and to include the North Island main trunk, then that's just a fact that it needs to do that. But then that allows the appropriate noise mitigation measures to be put in place. So it really is more of a controlling a line to control the amenity, which also acts to control the noise from the freight hub, rather than the noise that control a line that controls the freight hub noise per se.
And it also gives certainty to people that, you know, they can, depending on timing and the uptake of the freight hub and all those matters, but, you know, they have some degree of certainty of the effect they may be facing, rather than it could be open season and anything goes.
Yes, absolutely. And it will also help, you know, everything looks at existing houses, so if someone wants to build a future house, that gives them certainty as to where they can go and what level of noise insulation they should put in at the start rather than retrofit it.
I'm just writing some notes here. Thank you for that. So, my next question is around paragraph 57 and the subsequent discussion on the future noise contours. And you're saying that, in your view, they should be based on the maximum noise allowed by condition 85B, which is the 65 decibels beyond the designation boundary, and then 85, which is at the 55 decibels at the noise management boundary. I appreciate this may be a little unfair. Can you recall what Dr. Childs thought those future bundles should be based on?
I'll just look into the joint witness statement to see what was said there, because, yes, I may be limited as to what I can say on the basis of discussions that have been undertaken without prejudice. Right. So in the joint witness statement under 6.4... it states, Dr. Childs considers the indicative noise contours of the notice of requirement could change significantly during detailed design and are therefore not an appropriate basis for building treatment design. He considers the wording in condition 85B, that's the requiring authority's 85B, to be appropriate, which says including allowance for future noise from further stages of development of the freight hub. Ultimately, if insufficient allowance was made, then KiwiRail would have to bear the cost of any subsequent upgrades required to building treatment. However, in practical terms, Dr. Charles considers that the most common treatment will be provision of mechanical ventilation, which will address a wide range of noise exposures regardless.
So, looking at the requiring authority's version of 85B from the 13th of August,
yes.
Can you take me through in simple and layman's terms where the area of difference between you actually sits? Because I'm not quite understanding this yet.
So The key one on the 13th of August is 85B, and at the end of 85B, have you got that?
Yeah, I do.
It says the installation of insulation or ventilation must achieve acceptable internal noise levels of 35 dB in bedrooms, other habitable spaces, 23rd of October. Including allowance for future noise from further stages of development of the freight hub. Okay, so to me I'm not sure what that means. Whereas if you turn to our the section 42A conditions, I was going to plug my computer in so it didn't turn off.
Same number.
It's in condition 85C.
Yes.
D, little d. The noise insulation design report must identify noise insulation and or ventilation that is predicted to reduce the noise level shown on the future freight hub operational noise. So that's the immediate one for the next year. Contour map, figure two. Future noise. So that's where the future noise contour. So the future freight hub operational noise contour map. Future noise contours in order to achieve internal noise levels of, and that's the internal criteria. Now, at the bottom of that, it says figure two, freight hub, future noise contour map. So the intention then is to get a future noise contour map based on figure 12 from the acoustic assessment. And there's a description there. Condition 85C relies on the preparation and inclusion in the condition of future noise contours, noise contour map, which includes the predicted noise contours identified as 1 dB contours out to 45 dB, modelled to include noise from the NIMT. starting basis for this map is Figure 12 in the acoustic assessment as amended to include NIMT noise. The contours in Figure 2 will be informed by the site boundary noise limit 65 dB LAEQ1R and 55 dB LAEQ1R, the noise management boundary limits. Figure 2 could also be a series of maps as per figures 2 to 7 of the response to RFI dated 12th of February, suitably amended, which show figure 12 in greater detail. So that's the concept, is to have this future noise control map, which is actually included in the conditions with the contours set out in 1 dB increments, which is based on that figure 12 from the acoustic assessment.
But we don't have that yet, do we?
No, you've only got figure 12, but it would look... You don't have that yet.
And is that who would be preparing that, should we confirm this condition? Should we want to confirm this condition?
Should you want to?
Conditional tense there.
So I would imagine council would liaise with Kiwi Rail to come up with that plan.
So am I correct then that the difference between your position and Dr. Child's is that you are seeking to have a future contour map at 1 decibel intervals that basically sets out how much noise is going to be expected from the hub for each of the design stages that it may go through. And Dr. Charles is saying, well, there's going to be some noise in future and we'll deal with it when it happens.
Not exactly. What I'm saying is we should have the maximum noise levels that would be allowed to be generated by the freight hub in its ultimate operation, and design the noise insulation against that maximum noise. What Dr. Charles is saying, well, look, that could change over the different stages, so we'll just do it in a piecemeal fashion. I mean, I really want to see this so that the first new house that comes along, I'll know what I need to design for.
I understand the objective. I just don't know that the condition is expressed in a way that is elegant. But Commissioner Sweetman is the condition demon, so... You might have a view on that.
Condition guru.
Thank you for that explanation, Mr. Lloyd. That has helped me significantly, because I have to say I was really struggling with that. Yes. But that last couple of statements has really clarified it for me. I think I may have had one more question. Just bear with me.
One of those trying to do the best you can with what's available.
Yes, we have that challenge ahead.
Just while you're doing that, Commissioner Mackinson, are you just about to ask that another question?
I was, yes, yeah. I do have one more question.
Go ahead.
So it's around 72A, that condition. Sorry, I've just lost. Which you refer to at 65 small a in your statement today, and it's around nighttime construction works.
Ah, yes.
And the question I have, having read your joint witness statement, I see there's sort of a difference in opinion between yourself and Dr. Childs as to how, or the mechanism for dealing with nighttime construction noise. I believe Dr. Childs is suggesting it can form part of the broader construction management condition, and you're wanting to see a specific standalone condition. And the question I have is really around whether it is a preference for how it's dealt with, and that is the difference, or whether you are seeing there is insufficient control within the broader construction management conditions. And it's the level of control that is the issue rather than where the information is actually put.
Yes, it's the level of effect that could be a cause, that could be caused by nighttime construction works is in my mind, significant enough for it to have its own condition rather than go into a noise management plan which can change and can be watered down and can get lost. So it's significant enough for it to be put up front and everyone can see it, and then when it goes into the noise management plan, it's actually, we have to comply with this condition as far as aspects of it are concerned.
Surely through the management plan review process, that's, I believe, conditions 5, 5A and 6, actually through to condition 9, there is enough control in there to make sure that you have council involvement in the certification, the management plans, that the noise criteria, construction noise criteria, won't necessarily be watered down. Wow. But you have that review process. It's not just KiwiRail saying, well, this is the noise we're going to have and off we go.
Well, if I did it, then if I did the review, then that would be fine. But I don't think I'm going to be here in 15 years' time. So if you and we know from experience that if you don't write things down in conditions, they don't get done.
Thank you very much for your time, Mr. Lloyd. That's helped me considerably. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll find you wherever you are.
Thank you, Commissioner Meekinson. Yeah. Commissioner Sweetman.
Thankfully, Commissioner Marson has asked a lot of questions already in respect of the noise issues, so I really only have one for you, Mr. Lloyd, and that's going back up to paragraph 8 in your evidence today, and just the discussion about the noise barriers in relation to the perimeter road.
Mm.
Is it a feasible option that you could actually end up with two noise barriers and one either side of the road? And if so, what would the impact of that be?
I'm always reluctant to have two barriers because you tend to get sound bouncing off the barriers and over and negating themselves. If they were far enough apart, that would be fine. It strikes me as a waste to have two barriers when one would do. And if your barrier goes on the western side, you save on your asphaltic mix as well. You wouldn't need to put a quiet road surface. So there's actually quite good savings there. There are issues with when you put the asphaltic mix down and what happens if it gets if council take over the running of the road as to whether that stays or not. So all of these issues would disappear if the fence was put on the western side of the road. You only need one barrier.
Would it potentially have to be higher, though? Yeah. Would it potentially have to be higher, though, if it was on the western side? Because that's ultimately what Dr. Charles was talking about, was the difference in topography, and, you know, it needed to be higher, closer to the freight hub itself to address the potential noise. And if it was to the west, it wouldn't not necessarily be as effective.
Hmm. The fence is there because of those freight forwarding activities that take place and the truck activity that could occur on internal roads.
So
it seems odd that you've got those there, but then you've got a road right next to it, which is not attenuated. So that's kind of where what I'm struggling with, really, is why attenuate the freight hub, because you've got to meet a set of conditions and then you've got the perimeter road. And I'm not saying we've actually talked about applying the overall conditions to the perimeter road noise as well, but I don't think that can be done because of the way we've set out using the LEQ 1 hour contours. But yeah, I just think in the design, the overall design of the thing, it doesn't look beyond the scope of imagination to actually be able to keep the landform high enough to put a 3 meter high fence to attenuate all the noise.
Okay.
And save money all around, really. It just seems a sensible thing to do.
Practically, that might have a visual, if the land then needed to be raised, that might have a visual impact, correct?
Ah, well, there you go. Who knows? Yeah, where can we find a landscape engineer?
I was going to ask you about the practicality in terms of noise monitoring and measurement and the NIMT, but you answered my questions about those. So you're actually separating them out, and you've addressed it. So no further questions from me. And thank you for your time, Mr. Lloyd. Very helpful as always.
Thank you.
Just one point of question around simplification of your proposed condition 85CD and the reference to a figure 2 that is yet to emerge.
Yes.
Are you really saying here the noise insulation design report must achieve those internal noise levels, assuming the freight hub is operating at levels up to the 65 dBA and 55 L boundary with the NIMT included? Sorry, and with the NMR, and that's what you're saying, isn't it?
Yes.
So I wonder whether Ms. Copplestone can, with you, redraft that so figure 2 doesn't have to emerge and simply those words are stated. And then you get the thrust of what you're trying to achieve, which is a design of the internal arrangement of the house to achieve the worst case scenario.
Yep.
And the NIMT included as a cumulative effect. Is that all right?
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That's been a most intriguing, if difficult, session. And at this point, we will adjourn for lunch and resume at 2 o'clock. And thank you very much, Mr. Lloyd, for your time.
Thank you.